This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
We got a lot of football to get into, a little bit of NBA and some Mets news as well. Let's say good morning to the guys. Good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
I'm doing okay, Dave. I want to take this opportunity to assure our listeners that unlike the meeting the Dallas Cowboys had on Saturday, nor watermelons will be harmed in the 2 hours that we're doing our show.
Okay. That is a guarantee that Chris is willing to make, although Chris did take the Bucks minus four last night. So he joins us both in 1 and 2 this week, Chris, with our, Rick, I should say, with our selections. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good morning, David. Good morning, Christopher. I'm doing all right. We got Mike T on the show today. I got some, I got a beef with Mike T. I'm going to be honest.
What happened?
No, I'm going to shoot you straight. Well, because, I mean, you kind of guilted him into sending us some X2 last appearance.
I guilted no one.
No, which is fine. I appreciate that. I love some free X2. So he sends me a text message, reaches out. Hey, it's Mike T. You know, just want to get your address so I can send you some of this delicious X2.
Now, full disclosure, I received the same message.
Okay, so I send him not just my address. I say, hey, Mike, we love having you on the show. I know I'm not Jose Theodore, because, you know, he brings up Jose Theodore,
yes,
who's his neighbor, but I'm doing my best. Here's the end. I give him the end. Nothing. No response.
No response.
No, crickets. Not a ha-ha, nothing.
Yeah, he's that guy.
He's that guy. That's it.
So he really just wanted your address. He wasn't looking for small talk. He wasn't looking for friendship. He wasn't looking to take it to the next level. All he wanted was, give me your address and get out of my way.
Exactly right, which I wish I had known, because I get painstakingly, I'm trying to craft this response, because it's the first time me and Mike are going back and forth on text. I actually had Cass proofread it.
Really?
Do you think this is funny? What do you think about this text? She's like, oh, that's good. It sets the right kind of tone. You're joking. You know, maybe he'll respond. You know, spark up a little conversation back and forth, get to know each other off the
right
air.
Yeah, you know, it could have been the start of a beautiful friendship.
Yeah, nothing.
Nothing.
Crickets.
Yeah.
That's it. Mm-hmm. I was going to send him a beautiful Vitamix for Christmas, but I'm not going to do it now. I can't.
I'm sorry this happened to you.
I'd lose all self-respect. Okay, and also, can I ask you this question? Are we sure that RJ Bell took the Jets as his pick for our show?
Yes.
He didn't take the Packers?
No.
Because he took the Packers on the K-Show, which is another loss.
He might have taken the Packers on the K-Show on our show. I write it down the second he gives it to us.
I'm glad I have it right here. The Jets plus 9.5. But Canty and his pick was the Bucks, though, correct?
Canty and his pick was Tampa Bay minus 4, correct.
Okay, good. All right.
So that did not pay.
Just a little housekeeping. It's a tough week.
Yeah, so they dropped to 2-9. We all went 1-2. I mean, disgusting. The Green Bay couldn't cover that game.
Missed opportunity for me and you. Missed opportunity.
Disgusting.
Oh,
listen,
Tom Brady was awful last night, by the way.
Awful.
I still feel good about my pick. I mean, they got the ball back with 2.5 minutes left in a timeout, down by 3. They had a shot. Tom Brady threw the game away.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this as it happened last night. Sunday night, same situation. You have the best quarterback in the world easily go down the field and score the touchdown. Tom Brady, formerly that guy, formerly the best quarterback in the world, I mean, gets picked off easily in that situation last night.
Brady was not good last night. I think he averaged 4.5 yards an attempt. That's putrid. I mean, Jared Goff wasn't much better, but at least Jared Goff had the benefit of his receivers doing a lot of the heavy lifting with the yards after catch. I mean, Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods got busy last night.
They were terrific.
They were great. And the tackling by the Buccaneers secondary was awful. But I mean, all that being said, the Bucs defense did give them a chance. You had 2 turnovers in the second half of that game that gave your offense the ball in plus territory. So, I mean, they did try to help out the offense a little bit. I just feel like last night was an indictment on Tom Brady and that Bucs offense. They were down a couple of guys on the offensive line. Donovan Smith got banged up early in that game. A.Q. Shipley got banged up later in the game. So they had some moving parts up front. But that still doesn't excuse the performance that we saw from Brady last night. He's got to be better.
He was bad. And, Rick, you see who they played this coming week?
Oh, yeah.
Kansas City.
KC. But
yeah.
My one takeaway is, and I'm not still, I don't know how comfortable Tom Brady is in this offense yet. Like, Tom Brady at this point of his, he's 43 years old. I mean, do we need to see him take shots down the field? It's something he clearly struggles with, right? Like, that's not who he is right now, especially with a team, you know, like the Rams that early on in that game put pressure on him. Tom Brady with pressure does not correlate to good results.
That's
correct?
Every quarterback, though.
Every quarterback.
Yeah.
But, I mean, a 43-year-old quarterback, we've seen it, you know, numerous times this season, does not handle pressure well. Gets a little skittish in the pocket, makes some bad decisions. It's not great, especially when they can't run the football, which is something that they either can't do, offensive line, don't want to do, whatever it is. My takeaway from last night with the loaded NFC, It's not as loaded as the AFC.
No, AFC is loaded. NFC is
loaded.
Is okay.
Doesn't it almost feel like, because these teams are so up and down, that it's going to be matchup dependent on who ends up being the team to represent the NFC?
Yes. Yeah, especially with the home field advantage in the postseason.
It doesn't feel like there's one team. Maybe it's the Saints, but it doesn't feel like there's one team that's head and shoulders above everyone else.
I would agree with that, but if I forced you to pick a team right now, I think you would both, and maybe I'm wrong, I think you'd both would pick the Saints, and I think you'd have to.
I would probably pick the Saints, but I mean.
No, I wouldn't pick the Saints.
Who would you pick?
The Saints match
I wouldn't
up
pick
against
the
Green
Saints.
Bay.
Who would you
I'd
pick?
I'd probably go with Green Bay.
Really?
Yeah, because they have the best quarterback.
They do.
They're head and shoulders above. Aaron Rodgers is head and shoulders above anybody else, any of those other quarterbacks on those teams that we think are quote-unquote contenders. Even Russell Wilson, because he's going through a little bit of a slide right now. So, yeah, I would probably go with Green Bay Packers. They got a good quarterback. They can rush the quarterback. So I think those are things that play well in the postseason. But to your point, though, Rick, I guess my question to you would be, isn't it always matchup dependent when you get in the playoffs? Because in the postseason, anybody can get got.
Well, yeah, but I think there's. I mean, there's certain teams. I mean, maybe there's only one or two teams. Like, I don't think Kansas City is worried about whatever matchup. I feel like Kansas City can beat anywhere they.
I can promise you, Kansas City does not want to see the Raiders.
Yep, the Raiders
of anybody else. They don't want to see the Raiders. They'll play anybody else.
Yeah, but I would still pick Kansas City to beat the Raiders.
You'll pick Kansas City against anybody this postseason.
Of course you would, yeah.
Yeah, but I can't say the same thing about the. But my point is, I can't say the same thing about the NFC. Like, you say that Aaron Rodgers is head and shoulders above every other quarterback, I would disagree a little bit. I mean, I still love Russell Wilson. He hasn't had his running backs. Can Green Bay stop Seattle's running game? I don't know. I haven't seen Green Bay stop anyone's running game. Like, that's a fatal. Like, that's one of their huge flaws. The NFC has a bunch of teams that are good, inconsistent, that have like clear deficiencies that another team can exploit if that's how they choose to win a football game.
Yeah, there's no great teams in the NFC.
I will say this. I mean, Seattle played Green Bay in the postseason. What was that, last year? Didn't they go to Green Bay?
I don't remember this at all.
Yeah, I don't think that worked out for Russell Wilson.
Oh, yes, right. Green Bay. Well,
Seattle had a top five running game last year. We saw that movie.
And Seattle's defense stinks.
Yeah.
Stinks.
Yeah.
And Green Bay's defense is not much better. See, for me, and I get you disagree, and I understand why, New Orleans is the most complete team out there.
I agree with that. I just don't know what New Orleans quarterback situation is. Taysom Hill is not that dude. He was effective in what they asked him to do, but the Atlanta Falcons are a really bad football team. That defense is legit. I'm not taking anything away from Cam Jordan, DeMario Davis, and company. They're good. And they seem like they're getting better as this thing goes along. But I just wonder, will their offense allow them to compete at the highest levels against the better teams? I mean, let's face it. It was on Drew Brees the last couple of times they got put out of the playoffs with turnovers. So, I mean, are we going to expect him that he's going to be that much better when he comes back off of 11 broken ribs? I don't, which is why I'm skeptical of New Orleans.
Yeah, I think there's. You can look at any team in the NFC and say I don't love this.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't feel like that about Pittsburgh. I don't feel like that about Kansas City.
I just feel like Kansas City has another gear, though. I just feel like they're on a different level than everybody else in the NFL. Like, their A game versus anybody else's A game, they're going to win.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Yeah.
When I look at Pittsburgh, I don't look at the Steelers and say, God, I really worry about this. They're a terrific football team. Kansas City's better, but Pittsburgh's a complete football team.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's a good team. Pittsburgh's a really good team. They got a good defense, and that offense with Ben Roethlisberger back spraying it around to those receivers, like, that's going to be a tough out too. Like, I honestly believe that's going to be our AFC championship game. If something fluky doesn't happen, that'll be our AFC championship game. Because I feel like those two teams are better than any other teams in the AFC, any of the other teams in the NFL. I mean, those two teams have separated themselves.
I'd like to thank you guys for making my point there with your back and forth. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Which was what? That the NFC doesn't have a dominant team?
Yeah, those two teams that you mentioned, Kansas City and Pittsburgh, you trust. And I can't say the same about the NFC teams. I can't.
Yeah, I don't think either of us disagreed with that. I think we both completely agreed with you. The NFC is completely wide open.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for furthering my point. Thank you.
Well, we're here as a show unit.
I appreciate that.
I mean, it's not the AFC, which is loaded for all at the top. It's unbelievable.
Loaded.
That AFC.
So, I mean, and there's only one person on the show that called that months and months ago.
I saw it. You laughed at me. You argued with me. You were angry with me, and I saw it. And I stood steadfast in my point. I mean, look at this AFC.
Yeah, there's two really good teams in the AFC.
Stop it! Stop it! Come on! I said a loaded AFC. Buffalo, terrific. Colts 7-3. Titans 7-3. Browns 7-3. Ravens, good football team. They're 6-4. Raiders have proven they're a good football team. They're 6-4. Then you have Kansas City and Pittsburgh. It's loaded. Loaded.
I'm still not going to agree that. I'm still not.
I don't know why you can't just say, you know what?
Because
Dave, you were right. I was wrong. Why can't you do that?
Because at the time you had no
idea. Oh my God.
It was a slip of the tongue that turned.
It was
into
a slip of the nothing.
Slip of the tongue that turned into a fantastic take. Refuse to give you credit. I refuse to give you credit for it.
Why?
Because you had no idea that the Steelers were going to be good.
It's amazing that you just can't give me credit, can you? It pains you to give me credit.
It does.
Why? I would think you would look at me, I mean, a teammate, someone that you'd like to have succeed, and say, boy, Dave was just, he was so far ahead of the curve. He saw things that nobody else saw, and he saw it on our show. But you won't do that. You can't do that.
Isn't that what 955 is for? Like, isn't that your victory lap? I mean, how much more praise do you need in a two-hour show?
Some.
There's only so much that Canty and I can agree to.
I mean, if you make a point that's so brilliant and so ahead of the curve and so people don't see it on the horizon, yet you see it and you exclaim it after getting verbally abused by your teammates, I would think at that point, maybe a little bit of credit would be due.
I think you get plenty of credit. Plenty. Canty, correct me if I'm wrong. We do a two-hour show. Is there a segment that we spend 15 minutes on that highlights how great you are?
No.
No.
Well, hang on a second. What segment do we spend 15 minutes on to highlight how great I am?
Well, I mean, that's what Stump Rothenberg is.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Oh, on the Saturday show, yes. Yes, that's...
Oh, yeah, Stump Rothenberg. Then we do Andy from...
But, I mean, I feel like Andy from Merrick is an offshoot of Stump Rothenberg.
Listen, you don't want Andy from Merrick? We won't go with Andy from
Merrick.
No,
we love having Andy from Merrick. He's the staple on the show, Dave.
Yeah,
we're not getting
rid
of Andy. But, I mean, it is an opportunity for you to shine because it's sports trivia. And who's better at sports trivia and sports media than you?
Nobody.
Nobody.
Not many.
But maybe there comes a day when Canty and I just get fed up with you and we decide to call an audible. Maybe I call Red Panties and we switch it up.
I thought I heard that.
James Harden. Call James Harden. James Harden is a good one.
Yeah, a little Harden, little red panties.
You know what I do like, though, about watching these NFL games is you feel, granted, there's no crowd and it does take away a lot, but you it's very intimate. Like, you can hear everything the quarterbacks are saying. It's a pretty cool experience right now.
There was a crowd in Tampa last night.
How many were down there in Tampa, though, do you think?
I don't know, Dave. Probably too many, though. With what the country is going through right now, I don't think that's the best idea to have that many people in the stadium.
Dabo Sweeney did not think so. He thought it should have been packed to the gills. Mullen. Back to the guilds.
Yeah, Dan Mullen's all for having, during a pandemic, having the swamp, 90,000. But
yeah.
God forbid you put Christmas lights up before Thanksgiving. He's got a problem.
Yeah. These college football coaches have really shown who they are, haven't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Dabo was out of pocket for what he suggested this weekend. I don't know what he was talking. I can't wait to talk to Paul Feinbaum about that on Friday.
I mean, what is he talking about? He looks like such a fool.
Yeah, it's not a good look. It isn't. I mean, college football right now, and it's a mess. College athletics, period.
College basketball is going to be worse than college football.
I just wonder, where is Mark Emmert in the NCAA in all of this? Like,
I have
where's
no,
the oversight?
They have
like,
no control.
But isn't that what they're there for, Dave? To provide some oversight, some guidance, especially in times like these? They're spineless? Okay.
No, yeah, theoretically, yes.
Oh, okay.
In theory,
like,
you're
what's
right.
What's the point of the NCAA? What's the point of
that? There is none. There absolutely is none. There's no point to the NCAA because they do nothing.
Yeah, they're going to have to reimagine how they legislate collegiate sports. Because right now it just looks like the NCAA is a rubber stamp. Like they have no power. It's up to the commissioners of the Power Five conferences, and it's whatever they want to do. It's at their discretion.
Well, isn't that what we saw, right? Like with COVID, this conference is going to cancel. This conference is going to cancel. This is going to go on. I mean, Mark Emmert had no say in any of this.
No, he didn't. But what I'm saying is he should. I mean, there's just no continuity in what they're doing. There's no guidance. There's no, hey, this is what we're going to do. This is the plan. This is how we're going to execute it. It's pretty much, we're just going to leave these conferences and these schools to their devices. And whatever they come up with, we're going to be okay with.
And that's exactly what it feels like.
But how does that protect the interest of all of these kids? That's the problem I have. Because that's what the NCAA says that they're there for. They're going to protect the interest of the kids.
They can say what they want. They don't care.
They don't care. And the conferences have clearly shown that money is the motivating factor, not protecting these kids.
Let's go to a couple calls. 800-919-3776. Let's start out with Eddie in Brooklyn. Eddie, lead us off. You're on 98.7 ESPN. Good morning, Eddie. How are you?
Eddie's at a loss for words.
Yeah. He was going to say that most NFC teams do, in fact, match up with each other. He was just going to hammer home the point that you made earlier on in the show.
Oh, I like
how wide open the NFC is.
See, I like that. You're a good teammate. Bring him in.
This is what I was trying to do.
Just the exclamation point on the.
That's right. The cherry on top of said Sunday. Let's go to Spike in Jersey. Spike, you're first up now on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, my friends. Can you hear me?
What are you, rolling dice?
Yeah, I happened to just, I threw a 9. I was on the 5. No, I was just shifting some, your truth, the God's honest truth, I was shifting some of my medication, honest to God. Okay.
Okay.
That's what I was doing. First of all, happy, healthy holiday. I did this for you Saturday, Dave. You're worth doing it twice. You guys bring a lot of pleasure and fill a lot of time. It sounds old. It's not. And I hope some of the callers and all the listeners bring you back some joy also. It's a crazy year. Let's get it over with. Now, Tom Brady gets the ball back with 2 minutes to go. Dave, you may know this because you follow it. Did the odds shift dramatically for Tampa Bay to win the game at that point?
Because I'm sure they did. I mean, they have the live betting. I'm sure they. I mean, just it could have been any quarterback. You go from not having the ball down 3 to having the ball down 3, and a field goal ties it. Yeah, of course the odds shifted.
Well, I would think Rodgers and Brady, the odds would. Oh, and Mahomes obviously would. Shift even more dramatically because they've done it so frequently and so readily. But he looks like he can't throw that long pass anymore. And my eyes going bad too. Rest of my body. That Gronk dropped a couple yesterday.
Yeah. No, your eyes aren't going bad. Gronk is a shell of himself.
He's not the same Gronk that we saw
in New England.
I'm watching. It's just, I was very surprised that my mind's gone. The coach of the Jets who's the coordinator.
Todd Bowles.
Yeah. Okay. Why was he playing so loosely?
What do you mean playing loosely?
It seemed he was giving him a lot of stuff underneath. He was just playing a loose coverage. I don't know what like.
Well,
you
I mean, he
do,
was. But Spike, that's what you want to do. You play top-down coverage. So okay. You don't give up the big plays over the top and anything underneath you rally to. The only problem is the second and third level defenders for the Bucs couldn't tackle anybody.
Yeah.
That was the problem. I mean, the one they gave up to Robert Woods, that was a great play call by Sean McVay because it was an all-out blitz. But you still got to rally to that and tackle it. You can't let the guy run 35 yards downfield and set up a field goal.
Yeah. One last comment, and again, you guys, only the best for all your families. The interesting thing with the slate of games, I've seen Detroit since I'm 9 years old, which is 1,000 years ago. No need to see them. But I would wonder how the ratings are for Thanksgiving for the second game, which has peaked interest for us here. What do you guys think?
I think the ratings are always good for that Cowboys game. And look, and thanks, Spike, for the call, and have a great Thanksgiving as well. As bad as these teams are, it couldn't be more competitive. I mean, they're both sitting here at 3-7. They're both sitting here half a game out from this division. There is real meaning. I was telling Santiago before the show, I think the NFC East, Rick, might be the most intriguing division in all of football right now.
The most intriguing?
Yes. Not the best. I'm not saying that. But as far as intrigue, yeah, I think so.
The NFC West is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I would probably lean towards the NFC West.
I just think there's something so – it's like a train wreck, and you just can't.
It is. Any one of those teams can win the division. From that perspective, Dave, you're absolutely right. Because, I mean, even in the NFC West, that's a 3-team race. Like, with the NFC East, there's no telling. And I was surprised to find out the Dallas Cowboys have the easiest road of any of the teams in the division to actually win the whole thing. I think they got one team that they play that's over 500 right now. Just one?
Which is Baltimore, I think, right?
Yeah. So, I don't know, man. It'd be interesting to see who's going to win it. What if the Cowboys came back and won the division after all with no Dak Prescott and their defense being horrible?
They could. But, yeah, but is it a testament to them or a testament to how bad the division is? Like, if the Giants go 6-10 and win the division, I don't think anybody's screaming the Giants are a good football team. They're just in an awful division, and they were the least awful of any of the teams.
Yeah, it just so happened to work out for them, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but if the Cowboys won the division, I feel like that'd be a hell of an indictment on Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson. Like, it says more about them. Because, I mean, we kind of figured that the Washington football team would struggle, and we didn't exactly know what the Giants were. We thought they'd be more competitive than they have been in the 3 years prior. But we didn't think that the Giants were going to be a playoff team. I mean, if you're the Eagles and all of this stuff has kind of broke your way and you still can't find a way to get into the postseason with your starting quarterback?
Yeah, it's embarrassing, to be honest. If you're Philadelphia and you're on the outside looking in come the end of this regular season, what do you do?
I don't know, Dave. I mean, you're married to Carson Wentz for another season. You can't move him with that contract. Not right now. Well, you're not going to cut him.
Want any piece of him?
So yeah, you're not going to cut him. So I mean, Carson, you going to run it back with Carson Wentz in 2021?
You're gonna have to.
Yeah.
But it's bad. But you can't feel good about that. If you're Philly and every other team in this division, outside of the Giants, I guess the Giants have their quarterback, but Dallas is on their second string quarterback. Washington, you could argue, is on their third string quarterback. And the Giants are a team that started out 1-7 and is still not a very good football team. If you're Philly and you can't find your way to win this division, you just throw your hands up and you give up.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Dave. With the Giants, they didn't know that whether or not they had their quarterback. They thought they did, but they didn't know. I mean, if you rewind to the first half of this season, we were saying, well, if Daniel Jones keeps turning the ball over and the Giants have a top five pick, they've got to get a quarterback. Like, so, I mean, the conversation has shifted a couple of games with no turnovers and a couple of wins. Okay, maybe Daniel Jones is the guy. He can grow into the spot. But, I mean, there's still question marks about Daniel Jones. There weren't supposed to be any question marks about Carson Wentz, especially what he did at the end of last year when they won four straight to get into the postseason. Like, Carson Wentz is supposed to be the franchise guy. They gave him the contract 2 years ago. He's been making $34 million a year.
Yeah, I don't have the answer. He's terrible.
Yeah, but I don't understand how he got so bad so fast. Like, what happened?
Especially with what he did at the end of last season. I mean, he dragged that team to the playoffs last season. I know the team's been banged up and everything else. I mean, your offensive line's been a mess, but still, I mean, the decisions he's making,
he's awful. He's bad. Right now, Carson Wentz is a bad quarterback.
Yeah, I don't know if it's explainable. I mean, it's got to be a mental thing. I don't think it's a physical thing. I don't think it's that he's hurt. He's just making bad, awful decisions.
Maybe you guys can help me out with one aspect of this thing, though. How is any of what Carson Wentz is doing on the field on Doug Peterson? Because everybody seems like they want to blame Doug Peterson for it. And I know coaching has to take some level of responsibility for what they're seeing on the field because either you're coaching it or you're letting it happen. But how is this on Doug Peterson? Like, how was the pick six that he threw against the Browns early in that game on Doug Peterson?
I don't think it goes hand in hand.
Yeah, I don't think it's on Doug Peterson. I just think that when you're the head coach of a team with expectations and they don't, those are not met, that you receive a lot of blame.
I would agree with you guys, but I'm just saying a lot of analysts are saying, well, it's the scheme. They're not running the ball enough. They're not getting Carson out on the edge of the defense, moving the pocket. Like, they're saying all of these different things. And I'm just saying, well, Doug Peterson has tried all of those different things. A couple of reasons. First of all, the reason why they don't involve Carson Wentz in a run game is because the guy doesn't know how to protect himself. He gets hurt all the time. He even got knocked out of the playoff game that they played at home last year. So, I mean, clearly your quarterback can't keep himself healthy. So, from a play-calling standpoint, you're a little bit limited in terms of what you can do. But I don't understand how Doug Peterson is at fault for the version of Carson Wentz that we're seeing in 2020. I just don't get it. It's one of those things that I scratch my head. You can blame the head coach for a lot of things. I don't think you can put what's going on with Carson Wentz on Doug Peterson.
I just think they're tied together. I think it just is one and the same. It's probably not his fault. It's Carson Wentz's fault. But if your quarterback plays the way that he's playing and you keep rolling him out there, you're going to get some of the blame.
So what do you think they should do now? You think they should bench Carson Wentz for a game and go with Jalen Hurts?
I don't know. I don't know how – I would have to know how Carson Wentz would react to that. I don't know.
Hmm.
And prime time Monday night against Seattle, you're gonna put Jalen Hurts as your starting quarterback? I don't know.
I think it also depends too how the locker room is responding to Carson Wentz. Like, the whole situation is a weird situation if you think about it. I mean, having him play as well as he did, get hurt, Nick Foles jumps in, wins them a championship. There's a statue of Nick Foles. Like, and then, I mean, that's...
I can't imagine that helps Carson Wentz when he goes to work every day.
That's a weird spot to be in if you're Carson Wentz. And now you're playing the way that you're playing. And I'm sure you're getting side-eyes in the locker room right now at this point with how bad he's been. That's got to be... It has to be an uncomfortable situation for him. It has to be.
I'm sure. I mean, it was weird to start with, even when he was playing well. Right? That he's the franchise quarterback. He's the savior. He gets hurt. A guy that's for lack of a better term, a journeyman comes in, takes over that job, magical run, they win the Super Bowl. You go back to Carson Wentz, and he's played well in stretches, but he can never duplicate what Nick Foles was able to do. The whole thing is weird.
Well, yeah, and then he continues to get hurt. It was the other problem. I mean, again, the guy hasn't been able to stay healthy, which I think to Chris's point is probably part of the reason why Doug Peterson doesn't want to involve him a lot in the running game and everything else, because they're trying to keep him on the field. But
he's fragile.
Oh, mentally too. I mean, it's hard to explain with what you saw last year, because they were dealing with the same kind of injuries last year. They were decimated. Like, you didn't even know who he was throwing to, and somehow they find a way to win the division. And now to see what it looks like this year, I mean, it's been bad.
It's embarrassing, to be honest with you. The fact that team is not leading this division by a game and a half or two games is embarrassing. That they can't be 500 right now.
Yeah, but you watch them play. I mean, it's easy to.
They're bad.
To realize, I agree. When you watch how bad they are when they play.
Yeah, I mean, they were dominated by Cleveland, dominated in that game.
Well, I don't know about dominated.
They were. I mean, they,
Philly's defense played pretty damn good.
Well, Cleveland's offense is nothing to write home about outside the running game.
Well, which they shut down for the most part.
But I mean, offensively, I mean, Philly scored one touchdown, and that was pretty much in garbage time.
Yeah, but I think you're saying dominating. Carson Wentz was a huge part of the reason why that game ended up the way it ended up.
I've said it. He's terrible right now.
I mean, he's the reason why you're losing these games right now.
All right, so now here's some news. We'll get back to the calls in a moment. Jeff Passan just tweets. I don't know if you've seen this, Rick. Now, ordinarily, in years past, this would upset me. And I would probably spiral the rest of the show and not be as good as I've been in the first segment, and it wouldn't be good. But this year, I look at it, and it rolls right off the back. The Braves and right-hander Charlie Morton are closing in on a deal, according to our Jeff Passan and ESPN.
Yeah, I don't love it.
Yeah, but you know that the Mets are going to make their moves.
No, that's fine. I mean, they're going to make their moves. I agree with you. I would have loved to have a guy like Charlie Morton.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Because you're expecting to be in big games, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and have you seen Charlie Morton in big games?
Oh, he's great. He's the best in big games. So why would the Yankees not get involved? 1 year, $15 million for Charlie Morton.
That's what I was thinking about. Like, I feel like that could have been a guy that we add to the staff, a veteran guy, knows how to pitch in big games, can go out there and give you 4 or 5 innings in the postseason, and then you can turn it over to your bullpen. It seems like he's a perfect fit. But Atlanta's a lot closer than New York is to Tampa, so maybe that had to be a factor as well. Staying close to home.
I guess.
The nice thing about New York, though, is you get spring training in Tampa.
True story.
Yep. We don't know what's going to happen this coming season.
That's not great for the Mets, Dave. Let's be honest.
I don't think it's that bad, because I think
at the end
of the day,
it's not good.
Listen, it's not. Is it great news? No. Am I thrilled about it? Of course not. But at the end of
the day, you guys are going to get Trevor Bauer anyway.
Yeah.
You really think so,
don't you?
Yeah, it feels like it, man. It's just, y'all are going to go out there and get Trevor Bauer. Feel like that's the guy they've identified.
Yeah, but here's the point. I agree with you guys. I think Steve Cohen, I mean, everything he's done so far, we've agreed with. It's been great. He's going to make moves. Trevor Bauer, whoever it ends up being, Springer. I'm my only point being this. I'm not ever a fan of when the best team in the division gets better. Like, that doesn't excite me. It bothers me a little bit.
Well, why would it excite
me? I'm not devastated. But, I mean, it has a small effect on me.
But if they get Charlie Morton and we get Trevor Bauer, I mean, that's a pretty good trade-off, no?
Yeah, but why couldn't you get Bauer and Morton? I mean, you're still talking about it's going to be DeGrom and Bauer. Atlanta's got Fried, Anderson, Morton. I mean, they they got a pretty good pitching staff, too.
They have a great pitching staff.
Not to mention they have the defending MVP. They have Acuna. I mean, you name it.
Come on. Of all years, you can't just wait and see how this plays out.
Oh, no, you're a fraud because all of a sudden they're not.
How am I a fraud?
Because we haven't seen anything happen yet. The best team in your division just got better. A guy that I would have loved to have on my staff, then you're okay with it. You're
a fraud. Faith. No. It's called faith. I believe Steve Cohen is going to bring in the high-priced elite player. So would I like to have Charlie Morton? Sure. But I believe I'm going to get Bauer plus Springer plus. Already kept Stroman. I'm not worried about the Mets and moving forward and spending money.
I'm not worried about the Mets. What I am worried about is how good the Atlanta Braves are going to be. You got Fried, Soroka, Morton,
you don't have Soroka.
Smiley, Anderson.
You ain't going to have Soroka.
Well, Soroka could be back.
With the Achilles?
Yeah, I mean, Buster's got him chopped in for 2021.
I don't know. You got what we had that August, early August is when he had it? That would be aggressive.
February, March, April, May, June.
Early August. That'd be aggressive.
You have you it your months like a little boy.
I was counting on my fingers. You'll have him at some point next season.
Okay.
Listen,
I think you're not giving the respect that is due to one Steve Cohen.
I'm giving him respect. But, I mean, again, I would rather not any other team. I'd be fine with it. I wouldn't be fine with the Yankees signing him. I'd rather not the team that we're chasing sign him.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you, but I still have complete faith in the Mets and Steve Cohen and the fact that they're going to go out and spare no expense and bring in the high-priced free agent and make whatever move has to be made.
Okay.
I shouldn't have told you.
I was going to see it anyway.
I shouldn't have, yeah, but maybe you would have seen it after 11 and then you wouldn't be so upset.
I'm not so upset. I'm aggravated. I'm not so upset. I'm not like, oh, now we have no chance now. No, that's not the case at all. I believe we'll make the right moves. We'll find a GM, whoever that ends up being. Sandy's going to be more involved. Mm-hmm. And then we'll make the right moves, and we'll be right there. I would just rather him not have gone to the Braves.
Okay. Fair enough. Well,
Ken Rosenthal is also putting
crying?
Soroka.
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying?
That was a well-placed drop.
Yeah, excellent. And
Ken Rosenthal is also reporting that Soroka will be in the potential rotation.
Yeah, this is Buster. Buster has Fried, Soroka, Morton, Drew Smiley, which I thought was a strange signing from them, and Ian Anderson. Depth is Kyle Wright, Bryce Wilson. Atlanta will be in a formidable position in defending its NL East title. That's Buster.
Yeah, I don't love it.
Ago. I don't love it. Atlanta's a terrific team.
I do not love it.
All right, ESPN
Radio
presented.
You see what Washington's talking about doing, too? Do you see that?
What happened?
You see what Washington's talking about doing?
Oh, Chris Bryant.
Going after Chris Bryant, yeah.
Yeah. And I heard they're very involved with LeMahieu as well.
Could you imagine, too? Did you see this other report? Who's going back and forth with the Rockies for Arenado?
The Dodgers.
Oh.
That's where he's going to wind up.
That's unbelievable.
Well, they're going to let Turner go, and they're going to bring in Arenado.
Is there no luxury tax threshold for them?
They don't care.
They don't care.
And a lot of their guys are young.
Yeah, but they just signed Mookie Betts to a humongous deal. You know how much Arenado makes.
Yep.
That team would be ridiculous.
Yeah, but look at all the guys on that team that don't make a lot of money.
Kershaw makes a lot of money.
Yeah, Kershaw does, but Bellinger doesn't. And Seager doesn't.
Got to win them when you can win them, boys.
And Buehler doesn't.
Good point.
Got to win them when you can win them.
That they're going to be good for.
That would be a formidable lineup.
Forever. All right, so I told you that Buster only reported Charlie Morton to the Braves on the verge of being done 1 year, $15 million. You ready for his very next tweet?
Very next tweet, yeah. Calm me down.
All right. Braves have been aggressive so far, and the Mets will not be far behind, aiming at the best available players. A source says about the Mets targeting more than one of the big four of the winter. Springer, Real Muto, Bauer, Lindor. Quote, it's all true. How's that make you feel?
That makes me feel great.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I wasn't being doom and gloom. I would rather Atlanta not get better. I know we're going to get better. I would just rather Atlanta not get better.
I understand. But let's just be excited that the Mets are in a position they have probably never been in.
I'm still excited. Will you relax? I am still excited. Yes, I am excited. I cannot wait for us to sign multiple players this offseason. I'm really looking forward to it.
I cannot wait. I cannot believe this is happening, and I cannot wait. And if I'm going to get Bauer, another starter, I'll have Peterson and Stroman, and that's my rotation, and then I land a Springer or a Realmuto. I mean, the Mets are this is a different animal. This is not the Mets that we know.
Yeah, but no one expected it to be the Mets that we know.
I know. I know. But you know what? You got to understand that I'm like a kid in a candy store. I mean, this is very exciting.
I understand. You're all fired up. Your team's playing for first place. Hopefully, we'll see what happens this weekend. We'll see what happens on Thursday. There's a lot going on for you right now.
There's a lot going on.
You don't have to do anything as far as Thanksgiving is concerned. You don't have to shop. You don't have to cook. You can just sit there.
No, that's not entirely true. I play. We order a couple things, and I'm the one that placed the order the other day.
But Sherry told you what to order.
She told me what you need to order. Okay. I picked up the phone, placed the call, spoke to the person. Very nice conversation. Told them what we're going to need. Wednesday, 4 o'clock, when it's, as Chris, you know, chaos and havoc in the store, who's going in and dealing with that?
Oh, that would be you.
That'd be me.
The hope would be that you wouldn't have to because everything that the wife needs is at the house. That would be the hope.
Well, a couple things that are ordered, like the cornbread has been ordered. I have to pick that up.
Ordered cornbread?
Mm-hmm.
Why you
ordered cornbread? Ordered cornbread on Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's a head scratcher.
I mean, I don't make cornbread.
I know, but I just
I think
I don't
you
know.
Could.
No.
I don't. I mean, of all the things that you make during Thanksgiving, like that would be right. One of the ones that be like, yeah, you know what? I can just make this one at home.
Yeah, right.
They have a thing where you call, you order it. You don't have to make it.
No, I get it, but I guess I could understand you ordering a fried turkey. You know, I could understand you wanting to order a honey baked ham. Like I get
pie.
Those things.
Pie.
Yeah, pies are certain desserts, but the cornbread.
Is it world famous cornbread? Like, is this place known for like, cornbread?
Right? It's supposedly it's a best of Westchester cornbread.
Oh, okay. Well, you got to explain that then.
Well, I didn't know that it needed explanation.
Well, it kind of does. Like,
it does, yeah.
Yeah, like your cornbread, like Sherry makes good cornbread, but for some reason, like this place has got the best. And that's.
Yeah,
that's
this acceptable. Is considered the elite of the Cornbread Institute, yes.
Oh, okay, then. I mean, that's a no-brainer then.
Okay. And I'll be bundling up and wearing my mask and going in there and you know, goggles and everything on Wednesday, 4 o'clock.
We're going goggles too, huh?
Oh, yeah. On Wednesday, 4 o'clock with the spread good of this point. Thing, I'm going goggles. I'm
good point.
In.
Yeah, you don't want to be, that's the last thing you want right now. Not what you want.
No, not at all. So how do you feel Luis Rojas is they said he's gonna be back and this is his team for another year. You feel okay with that, right?
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, I mean, he's got good relationships with the players. I mean, who knows if he was able to manage last year with how involved Brody was. Some of the things that we heard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't get a chance to hire who they wanted or actually to sit down and have meetings with who they wanted to hire as the president of baseball operations. So it still seems like there could be, like it could still be up in the air. This might be a one-year proposition.
It sounds like Sandy.
I thought they weren't going to do that. I thought they were just going to go through the process of hiring a general manager and leave the president of baseball ops vacant.
They were. That's what I just said. They couldn't meet with the person that they wanted to.
Right. Who's the guy from the Indians, right?
And okay. Then Milwaukee too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Stearns in Milwaukee, and then they had Antonetti in Cleveland. In
Cleveland.
And who knows? I mean, I would imagine you'd have to believe that through back channels or whatever else, Sandy Alderson got a gauge on what Theo Epstein was doing. Like, if he really wanted to take a year off. Because, that would seem like the first person that you would call.
Yes.
So maybe he doesn't. I mean, maybe Theo Epstein really wants to, you know, figure out what he wants to do, take a year off.
So take a year off. Sandy's more than competent in that role.
And then reassess. Maybe he wants to come back the following year.
Yeah, but there's no way that Epstein was going to be allowed to step down and then take another job this year. Like, the Cubs weren't going to go for that.
Well, depending on what Steve was gonna, what kind of deal they could broker. I think the Cubs like Jed Hoyer.
Well, they just signed to a big extension.
They just signed a 5-year extension. He was next up. This would be, in all honesty, though, with where the Mets are at, what Steve Cohen wants to do, how much money he has to spend, the landscape of baseball, what's going to be available. I would have a hard time turning down this job. With what this team could be immediately. Like, you know, in all honesty, like with the right moves this offseason, this team could be right there.
Right there.
Right there.
I mean, don't you expect with the right moves that the Mets are, and I don't think winning the World Series, I think that's a lot, but competing for a spot in the World Series? Like, right, as you said, right there.
Yeah, I don't think that's even a question. I mean, if you look at, offensively, you look at their numbers from this last shortened season. I mean, they were fine. They were actually really good. Just the pitching was bad. They got less out of more talent than any team in
yes.
Major League Baseball.
Yes.
There's no question
when
about
you, that. I mean, and especially if I would have told you before the season, DeGrom would be DeGrom, which you figured. Dom Smith would be a guy that you could have discussed for the MVP. And this team would still, Jimenez would come up and produce. And this team would still be incapable of being one of eight teams in the National League to go to the postseason.
Cano was actually good. That. I mean, Cano was actually good. Conforto
yeah, he hit
was
well.
Good. What hurt you was
well, we know why Cano was good.
Yeah, exactly right. Pete wasn't very good. That's what that really hurt.
No, he was bad.
He was bad. That hurt you.
But your bullpen, I think, was what really killed you.
Yeah, but then Diaz bounced back. I mean, last month of the season for Diaz was great. Do I trust him? No, absolutely not. But, I mean, it wasn't – I wouldn't point to that as one of the biggest reasons why we weren't a playoff team.
It's hard to survive when you only trust one starting pitcher in your rotation.
Yes.
That's hard to – it's hard to compete.
Well, Stroman opted out. Right, Peterson was good, but then he got shut down.
Yeah,
so you're right. But
Lugo came in, was kind of inconsistent, struggled as he kind of ramped himself up.
Right,
I would still rather have him in the bullpen,
like two innings at a time. Anyway,
I would rather him in the bullpen. Let's be honest.
I think that's your better move is Lugo in the bullpen.
He could be a good starting pitcher, but he's elite for us in the bullpen.
And you need bullpen.
Yeah, he's a weapon in the bullpen.
I think at the end of the day, you're going to look at the starting staff and be like, boy, that's pretty good.
I have no question. I mean, if it's going to be DeGrom and Bauer as your 1-2,
and Stroman Peterson,
with Stroman slide in as your 3, and then we'll see when Syndergaard. I mean, Syndergaard, if you've seen the post of him throwing the baseball with his shirt off, looks pretty good. All oiled up, glistening, throwing a little bullpen session.
It's exciting.
Man, that's a formidable rotation.
It is exciting. All right, guys, the Michael Kay Show's 20-20 contest continues today, 3:00. Now. As we all know, the K-Show has talked to the biggest sports celebrities in the game, and all you have to do is recognize their voice. This all ends tomorrow, Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, so you only have two chances left to cash in. Today, the guys are giving away a Samsung 4K 58-inch television. It's the 2020 contest brought to you by PC Richard & Son, Kansas City Steak, The Bartesian Premium Cocktails On Demand, and 98.7 ESPN. So, big giveaway. And I'm understanding tomorrow, everyone's favorite, the day before Thanksgiving, cash. Cold, hard cash. Let's bring him in, intro music and all, Andy from Merrick.
Good morning, DCR.
Good morning, Andy.
What a glorious day. I'm looking out the Rothenberg basement through those wonderful Windorama windows, and oh, what a day outside.
Look at you, Dave. Windows in the basement. Nice touch.
That's right. We don't want him to feel isolated down there.
That's a good point.
Hey, we got Tuesday. We got an NBA 4-pack for you. Once again, serving youth. Question number one. The youngest player to make an NBA debut was just 18 years and 6 days old. Who was he?
I think it was Andrew Bynum?
I think you're correct.
Yeah.
Attaboy, Dave. Attaboy, Dave.
Thank you.
Time to shine, baby. Come on.
All right. This active player is the youngest to ever lead the league in scoring. At 21 years old, he averaged over 30 points a game. Name him.
How was Durant?
Durant is correct.
There you go.
Yeah, baby.
Save DiPietro. This active player is the youngest to ever lead the league in rebounding. At just 22 years old, he averaged 14.2 bounds per game.
Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard is correct. You guys are on
Dave.
Fire.
Come on, baby.
Oh, I smell the cornbread already.
That's right.
And
it's not picked up yet, Andy. It's not picked up yet.
Oh, it's only Tuesday.
Yes.
Oh, man.
I know you tend to lose track of date and time down there. Go ahead.
Well, you know, the basement, it gets a little lonely down here. And question number four. The youngest player to ever score 60 or more points in a game was just 20 years old. Who is this active player?
Is that Booker?
Yeah, I bet you it is. Devin Booker.
70 points for the Phoenix Suns.
Bang! Bang!
A clean sweep for DCR on a beautiful Tuesday. Fellas, let's be careful out there. And as always, stay healthy, boys.
Yes, well done. Thank you, Andy. Thank you very much. I love the bang bang, too. It really puts a big bow on the whole thing.
Here, I mean, that's you know what you just did there. You know
what
you just did.
I just know it. Just it ties it all together. It's a great soundbite.
I love that soundbite.
Yeah,
I would love it for CMT, but unfortunately we can't use it.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
There, you got that one.
Yeah, which is fine, but I mean, let's face it, the Breen bang bang is. It's fantastic.
It's sensational.
I would like to get, if we get Mickey Callaway talking about dry humping to Santiago, I think that would fit well into CMT.
Mr. Unlimited.
Dry humping his pitching staff. I think that would fit perfect.
All right. The Sam and the Fam. Video chatting with the family this holiday season. Well, we've got the perfect guest for everyone's virtual gathering. New York Jets quarterback Sam Darnold. It's 98.7 ESPN Sam and the Fam sweepstakes. Here's what you do to win. Send us a brief message telling us why Sam should hang out with your family for a 30-minute virtual huddle. Send us that message at 987ESPN@gmail.com. That's 987ESPN@gmail.com. Winners will each get a one-of-a-kind experience with friends and family to have a virtual hangout with Sam Darnold, all from your home for the hookup and your home for the hangout, 987ESPN. So that is a very cool giveaway. Going on here at 98.7 ESPN. We'll wait on Mike Tannenbaum, but I want to start this conversation, Chris, and I want to start with you. What do you, because we've had a few days to kind of see where we're at, and I don't know if you saw the Jason Lockenfour article that says that he thinks that Jason Garrett could be out at the end of this season. Where are you with the whole Colombo Judge firing of the offensive line coach right now, after we've had a couple of days to kind of sit and chew on it?
I still feel the exact same way that I did when it all went down. It's something that really doesn't happen a whole lot around the National Football League, and it just feels a little bit weaselly just based on Colombo's reaction. Now, I have some context because I was teammates with Mark down in Dallas. I know the man. So although you could certainly say that he was insubordinate at spots and unprofessional, I don't believe that he would react that way if he wasn't completely blindsided by the move that Joe Judge made to hire Googe as a consultant, but someone that oversaw what was going on the offensive line. So I don't know, something about it that feels off to me. And just listening to what players are saying, Evan Engram and Leonard Williams in particular, about how they were surprised by it, it feels like guys in the locker room like Colombo. So the thing that I'm going to be watching for this week in particular, and especially in the game against Cincinnati, is how do the players react? I mean, how is that move going to be received by the locker room? Because I think that'll give us some insight as to, you know, how the players feel about Joe Judge and his decision to move off of Mark Colombo in the middle of the season.
All right, let's bring him in. Time now for the Mike Tannenbaum Report, brought to you by Fidelis Care. Mike, we do have a couple of bones to pick with you, but we're not going to do that right at the start of the hit. Let's have the pleasantries and say good morning. How are you?
Or do the bones have anything to do with, like, turkey and this being Thanksgiving week, Dave? Or?
Sure. It just to keep you engaged until we tackle the issues. Yes, it's the wishbone is the issues that we're going to have. But let's start out with this Colombo Judge issue. Firstly, this doesn't happen very often, does it? And secondly, from what you've heard, what exactly went down with the Giants and Judge and Colombo and this whole firing?
Yeah, this is just reasoned speculation on my part because I have been through some offensive line changes for weird reasons myself with Coach Forster in Miami, and I've actually worked with Coach DiGuglielmo more than once, who I happen to like a lot. But, you know, to me, what this is all about is when you're a first-time head coach and you're putting your staff together and you don't have an expertise on one side of the ball like Coach Judge does with offense, you're going to rely on Jason Garrett, who's obviously a long experienced coach, and he's going to bring in people that know his scheme, which is obviously, you know, Mark Colombo. And what happens over time is you're going to ask questions, and you've come from a historically great system in New England where you've seen Dante Scarnecchia for 25 years run really an impeccably coach.
Uh-oh.
We lost him.
That's not good.
That's it.
It was a very good point. I wonder if he knew what was coming when you were, because you're all upset with him I'm thinking maybe. Well,
no, yeah, I mean, I'm sure he realized. That's unfortunate, though. It felt like that was going to be a really good answer.
It was the makings of a beautiful answer, and then it just kind of went dead.
We'll get him back, and we'll get the remainder of that answer.
But he says that he's seen this kind of thing before. I don't know. It doesn't feel like this happens all that often, especially after you've won two football games in a row.
Yeah, but now I didn't realize at the time when we first started talking about this, because the reports hadn't come out yet, that this was in front of the team that this happened, which I'm sure was an awkward situation.
You're talking about the correction that Judge was trying to make with Nick Yates?
Well, no, it sounded like, from what I read, too, is that the unsavory words or whatever that Colombo used were because Joe Judge was ripping into Andrew Thomas, and yes. Colombo came to Andrew Thomas's defense.
Correct.
And then they went back and forth.
Yeah, correct. I think that was just one of the dust-ups that they had, though. I think it was several.
See, it seems like there was a lot of bad blood between this two. All right, we got Mike back. Mike Tenenbaum on 98.7. Mike, continue with your point on what happened in your mind with the Giants and Colombo.
So, and I've seen this before, guys, so apologize for dropping off there. But basically, you know, Joe Judge for years saw Dante Scarnecchia run a flawless offensive line from a scheme, more importantly, from a fundamental standpoint. And Dave DeGuglielmo knows that system really well. That's why Dave's been in demand in prior years in his career. So I'm sure what he's saying is, why not bring in another expert who happens to be out there? He can only help. It's another set of eyes. And then you have a guy like Mark Colombo, who's a prideful guy, saying, hey, you either believe in me or you don't. And I'm sure that was a big factor in it. You know, a lot of these offensive coaches are very prideful, and they don't feel like they need other people to chime in. And if you either believe in me, you believe in me. If you don't, with this other guy, and I don't believe in consultants, and I'm sure that was a significant factor in what happened.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike, my only concern with this would be that the reason why it seems like there was a rift between Colombo and Joe Judge was Colombo believes in continuity with the offensive line. He doesn't believe in subbing, you know, linemen in and out, which I would imagine if you're an offensive lineman, you're on board with that. Like, I want to play. That would make me a little bit nervous as to how the players would react to making a move like this.
Well, yeah, but again, you know, the best players, Rick, need to play, and if Joe Judge wants to rotate guys, then that's the head coach's, you know, discretion. Look, I've been around, like, the guy that did that the best, in my opinion, was Rex Ryan. On defense, he would give everybody a blitz package. He would give them a role. It was just something he believed in, and if Joe Judge wants to play seven or eight guys, especially in year one, something was working. Like, they're getting better on the offensive line. So if that's what he wants to do, then, you know, that's what he believes in.
Mike, you said you've seen these types of situations happen before and you've actually been a part of them. Have you ever seen the security staff fire a position coach and not the head coach? Because that's what's being reported right now, that the Giants escorted Colombo back into the building where the security staff told him he was dismissed because the organization – in fear of another dust-up, didn't want Judge and Colombo face-to-face. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
No, Chris. And, you know, I always felt like part of my responsibility, and look, I've had the privilege of running two NFL teams, and, you know, you love the title, you love the salary, you love all that comes with it. But I also always felt it was my responsibility that if and when we were going to let somebody go, a coach, a player, they had to hear it from me and the head coach, because that was just the right way to do it. And as you guys know, in my career, I've been on both ends of some really, really hard conversations, and I just believe in looking people in the eye. So that's a new one for me.
Mike Tenenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Mike, I want to ask you about the Giants and where they are within this division now. Half a game behind Philadelphia. Philly is playing horrendous football, and the quarterback is almost unplayable at this point. The division is completely wide open. Do you like the Giants' chances? I mean, they've played better football, turnover free. Offensive line has been better. Quarterback has been better. Have a couple of games on the schedule, which are not all that daunting, especially this game against Cincinnati with no Joe Burrow. I mean, where do you land as far as the Giants winning this division now?
Yeah, Dave, it's really interesting. You know, you give them a puncher's chance, you know, and you know, Dan Orlovsky said something very similar yesterday, which is, you know, if Daniel Jones doesn't turn the ball over, which is obviously, you know, a huge if, but like what we saw what happened, you know, they are hard to beat when he doesn't put the ball on the ground or when he doesn't turn it over. You know, he's a better athlete than people, you know, understand him to be. He could have been a major, major Division I college basketball player. So I think they're in it to the end. I think for one game, though, I probably would take Andy Dalton. And, you know, the other interesting story to me is Alex Smith. Alex Smith has maybe, you know, the most in terms of, like, pedigree of anybody. And obviously his story is historically interesting. So I don't think you could rule out Washington because they have such a good defensive line. But, boy, this is going to be a lot of fun. I know it's from a record standpoint, it's not what anybody wants. But, boy, it's going to be competitive. And the Giants are right there. And give Joe Judge a lot of credit.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike, Dave asked this question to us earlier in the show, and we couldn't explain it. Now, maybe you could explain it for us. What exactly have you seen with Carson Wentz? What's going on with him right now?
I'll give you one word. It's confidence. You go back to that pick six, and everyone's going to be like, oh, bad throw, or his arm got hit. The only reason that happened is he didn't trust his progressions. He had somebody wide open in the seam earlier in the play, and a young Carson Wentz would let that ball rip. And it's one of these things where, especially in these major Northeast markets, you can lose confidence. What's surprising to me, guys, is Carson Wentz was a very, very successful player in the NFL. So to see it happen now is just really surprising. Their offensive line really isn't as good as it once was. And I think one of these injuries that no one talks about is Andre Diller getting hurt. He's a very talented left tackle with great feet. You know, he's out, and that caused Jason Peters to go to left tackle. He's done. He's a Hall of Famer, but he's done. They tried this Mulata, who's more of a project. And when your weapons get hurt, like Alshon Jeffries, you know, has been hurt, Ertz has been hurt, and your offensive line hasn't really been there, it's hard to play well, and I think it's really affected his confidence.
Mike, do you agree or disagree with Brian Flores' decision to bench Tua on Sunday and go with Ryan Fitzpatrick and then start Tua again this coming week against the Jets?
Yeah, I thought it was a great decision, and here's why. The 52 other players of the Miami Dolphins are saying if Brian Flores could bench the top five quarterback and Tua Tagovailoa, this, you know, progenitor son who is going to be our franchise quarterback for the next 10 years, he could bench me. And I promise you, they will have a spirited and competitive practice. They'll have very few mental errors. So if he has that standard of, hey, the best players play, that's what you want for your program. And when you compare it to Doug Peterson, who I think is really handling it poorly, he's setting a double standard. He's saying that, you know what, Carson Wentz, you could play bad. You could turn the ball over and you could still be out there. And I think long-term, Brian Flores is sending the right message to his team.
But Mike, is that just a head coaching decision or is that an organizational decision? Because Howie Roseman was the one that gave Carson Wentz the contract extension, not Doug Peterson.
Yeah, I think, you know, the way I've always defined it, you know, during the year, Chris, like the head coach has to be the one in charge of play time. You can't have players coming up to your office saying, hey, I want to play. Because as you know, you're never going to have anyone feel like they're paid fairly or their role's fair. And you need bright lines, which is, hey, during the offseason, we're going to work together. We're going to build this team. We're going to figure out the cap, how we're going to spend it, draft choices. But once we get to the regular season, the head coach has to be able to stand up in front of the team and say, hey, I determine play time, nobody else.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Mike, who's the best team in the NFC right now?
Boy, that is a great question. You know, I think if we're being really fair about it, we got to say the New Orleans Saints. And remarkably, they're undefeated over the last 2 years, guys, without Drew Brees, which is really remarkable. And, you know, Taysom Hill, I thought, played well, not perfect, but really did a nice job in his first start. And defensively, they're coming. And DeMario Davis and Quan Alexander at linebacker are doing a great job. And I think they're the most complete team right now.
Mike, were you surprised that it was Taysom Hill? Or is that he's been there longer than Jameis and also gives them the opportunity to see whether he can be their long-term solution at quarterback?
Yeah, Rick, I think it's really much more the former, which is, again, this we've talked about this quite a bit, guys, right? No off-season program, no OTAs, no preseason games. And if you're Jameis Winston, you're the third string, so you're not getting many reps at all. And because of that, you know, you're 3 years behind Taysom Hill with 1 week to get ready. So I think it was the right decision. And now, if you're the Saints, you may have your quarterback of your future right there, presuming that, you know, Drew Brees does retire.
Mike, on Monday, Rex Ryan has some strong takes about the Bengals organization and how they've managed Joe Burrow. What's your take on that whole situation, and what do you make of what Rex had to say?
Yeah, and I take no pride in this. You know, I said the same thing for 4 months, Chris. You know, you look at the way the Chargers and the Dolphins handled their rookie quarterbacks. They held on to Tyrod Taylor. They held on to Ryan Fitzpatrick. I still don't understand why in the world would you cut Andy Dalton when you're trying to make Joe Burrow this quarterback for the next 10 years and you have all this wisdom walking out of the building. Then you play Joe Burrow and you have more dropbacks than any player in the league, and he sacked the third most times when you have Gio Bernard and Joe Mixon. That makes no sense to me whatsoever. You have a great player that you want to make right for the next 10 years, and I think they've totally mismanaged that situation going back to April.
Mike Tenenbaum with us here, 98.7. Mike, I think we would all agree that the AFC is loaded. I mean, it's a conversation we've had for a long time here on this very show. But when you look at the top two teams, is it Kansas City and Pittsburgh, or is it clearly Kansas City and Pittsburgh is a distant second? Even though the Steelers are undefeated, do you look at Kansas City as by far the better team?
Yeah, I do, because I think we're watching Michael Jordan. You know, we have these debates about MVP, and Kansas City's lost one game in a year, and Patrick Mahomes has thrown one interception. I think he's so much better than everybody else. I think we almost take his greatness for granted. And if you're the Raiders going back to that game the other night, maybe they should have gone out at the one-yard line, taken me, and you know, trying to score with as little time left as possible, because this guy right now is truly, like, it's unstoppable. And Kelce and Tyreek Hill, I think it's Kansas City and everybody else. And I think as great as Tom Brady and that run was in New England, I think Patrick Mahomes, if he stays healthy, could shatter all those records, because wow. The difference between, in my mind, Mahomes and Brady is Mahomes is actually a better athlete. But it's really remarkable what they're accomplishing right now.
Mike, how surprised were you? I mean, going into that game with all the talk coming out of Kansas City, Andy Reid talking about the victory lap, them coming off a bye, how good they are. I mean, Vegas gave them everything that they could handle. Is that just a good matchup for the Raiders, or do you look at the Raiders as one of the better teams in the AFC?
I think the Raiders are balanced, Rick, and I think Josh Jacobs probably doesn't get the credit on a national stage that he deserves. And I think what that does is, and this goes back to some of those great Jet teams that we had, which was when they know you're going to run it, and we know we're going to run it, and we can still run it, you have a good team in terms of being able to control the line of scrimmage, and that's what they can do. And Tennessee is just like that as well. And that's why Tennessee got to the championship game last year. They were probably not as talented in some other positions, but when you have Derrick Henry and you can control the line of scrimmage, you have a chance, and that's what the Raiders have right now.
Mike, is it time to recalibrate our expectations for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? They're 1-3 in primetime games, and against better competition, they don't seem to step up. Am I missing something with this team?
Yeah, I was really surprised that late interception by Tom Brady. That was, to me, a pretty easy read. You have a middle-of-field safety there, and he still throws the ball down the seam. I mean, that was an easy play for Jordan Fuller, who's a New Jersey native, by the way.
Was it the one where he's targeting Godwin or Brate? Which one are you talking about?
Yeah, at the end of the game, Godwin.
Brate?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And Jordan Fuller made a pretty easy interception. So I think right now, like, when I look at them offensively, it just doesn't seem like they're playing to Tom Brady's strengths, which is have a pre-snap read, know where you're going to go with the ball, and get the ball out of his hands. And they're taking all these shots down the field, and it's just not working. So you have to go by what you see. And as good as they are on paper right now, I would clearly put them behind Green Bay and clearly put them behind the Saints.
Mike, let me ask you about the young quarterback. If you could have any of Herbert and Tua and Burrow, and let's include the college kids as well, Lawrence and Fields and maybe the kid from BYU and anybody else you want to include, where would you go?
Yeah, so, you know, I've answered this question for a while. I would say Lawrence is one and Herbert is two. And, you know, I've been talking about Herbert over those other guys, you know, for quite a while. And it goes back to, you know, you guys work with Chris Canty every day. Chris is a really big man, and I wouldn't want to make Chris angry. And I'm being serious now. It's a big man sport, and Justin Herbert is a big man. He gives you a chance to win every week because he's built to laugh. He's built like Ben Roethlisberger. And, again, I take no pride in saying this, but we talked about Joe Burrow and his chances of getting hurt for months, and Justin Herbert is built to last, and that's why I think he's going to have a great career. I think Lawrence has a chance to be Andrew Luck, and closely behind those two, to me, is Justin Fields. I still can't believe that Justin Fields didn't start at Georgia. I think they made a massive mistake on that, and I expect Justin Fields to be the second pick in the draft. And I think sometimes when you look at things, like, would Washington go back now and take Justin Herbert over Chase Young? And I think when we get into those discussions in the spring, guys, I think Justin Fields will clearly be the second player picked in the draft.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. Yeah, Mike, if Chris acts up, we call security. We don't try to handle it ourselves. We go New York Giants style. Last one for me. Sam Darnold's been dealing with the shoulder injury. In your opinion, if the Jets have the first overall pick, you just said how much you love Trevor Lawrence. They're going to take Trevor Lawrence. What's in the best interest of the New York Jets as far as getting the most possible from Sam? Is it to shut him down to make sure he doesn't get further the injury, or do you have to get him on the field so he can play the last 6 weeks of the season?
Yeah. Football players play football during football season. That was an old Coach Parcells expression, and it still holds true to today. If he's healthy, if he can protect himself, he needs to play. It's good for the Jets. It's good for Sam Darnold. Knowing Sam and his character, I'm sure that's what's going to happen once he's cleared to play. So hopefully that shoulder gets better quickly. And every time he can get out there, it's an opportunity to get better. Look at Daniel Jones. Like, Daniel Jones is getting better. Like, there's nobody here saying that Daniel Jones is not an improved football player. That's because he's a hard worker. It's important to him. And Sam Darnold is very similar. Sam Darnold needs to play to get better.
Mike, I think the consensus around football is the NFC West is the best division. Who wins that division, in your opinion?
Boy, that's a great question. It's not Seattle, because Seattle can't get off the field. Their defense is atrocious. You know, I think for one game right now, I'm taking Kyle Murray. I just trust him a little bit more. I think he's an exception to the rule. I was wrong on him. I would not have taken him first overall, but his short area of quickness is really rare. I don't like it for the next 10 years for the reasons we've talked about, but this year for one game, I'm going to take Arizona.
Mike, because we care for you greatly, before we get to the issue at hand, as always, you sound energized and lively, and I'm wondering why, in fact, that is.
Well, Dave, you know, I take X2 Performance, which is available at x2performance.com. It's an all-natural, healthy energy drink with clean ingredients, and it's used by a lot of pros, and privileged to be part of it, and I appreciate you asking.
All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, now, I didn't want to do this, but I think it's a necessity just to stay on good terms with all of us. You texted us on the show saying, I'd like to send you some X2, and what's your address? And I received it, and Rick received it, and I answered back. My understanding is that Rick tried to start Rick, you can interrupt me if I'm wrong, a dialogue, a conversation, like a friendship via text, and wrote you a funny, witty retort, and thinking that this would begin a little back and forth on Twitter. Crickets. Absolute crickets. And I got to be honest with you, he was very hurt by this when we talked about it earlier on the show.
Well, I am sorry. You know, the intent of it was to make sure that you guys all got your X2, and maybe I was, you know, a little bit too busy. So, you know, Rick, I want to say in front of our audience, like, I appreciate our friendship. I'm thankful for it the week of Thanksgiving, and I will quickly correct that.
I don't know if I can trust it. I don't know if I can trust it. I tried Olive Branch. I wanted to spark the back and forth, me and you, just off the show, and that's fine. Listen, we can work on it. Not a great start, but I feel like we can regroup and get past it.
And was X2 like a good token of friendship and maybe a good start to that?
I can be bought. Yeah, I can be bought.
I think we all can. Mike, even though, you know, there's a little disdain here on the show, we appreciate you. We thank you. Have a great, safe holiday, and we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. I appreciate it, guys. And, Rick, you know, we're going to start fresh next week. You know, Thanksgiving, Christmas is a joyous time of the year, and I hope that's where we can get to as well.
Love you, Mike.
Moments away from CMT. But first, I want to tell you about how you can win prizes. The Michael Kay Show's 20 in 20 contest continues today, 3 o'clock. The Kay Show has talked to the biggest sports celebrities in the game, and all you have to do is recognize their voice. Now, it all does end tomorrow, sadly, so you only have 2 chances left to cash in. Today, the guys are giving away a Samsung 4K 58-inch TV. Tomorrow is cash, so win. It's the 2020 contest, and it's brought to you by PC Richard & Son, Kansas City Steak, the Bartesian Premium Cocktails On Demand, and 98.7 ESPN. So obviously, 3 o'clock today, you have to tune into the K Show because it's entertaining talk, and it's giveaway upon giveaway. And Rick, now it's your time to shine with a little CMT.
All right, here we go, boys. Little Tuesday edition, getting us ready for Thanksgiving. All right, I'm going to start with something that's going to put Dave in a good mood because I'm sure I know his answer already. We turned the microphones on Monday. We turned them on. Who was in first place in the NFC East? The Washington football team, the Dallas Cowboys, or your New York Giants?
Well, let me ask you a serious question. If you want to, you want to take this seriously or is this just for fun?
No, I'd like to take it serious.
Who has the tiebreaker? I guess Dallas has the tiebreaker over the Giants, right?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I expect Dallas to beat Washington on Thursday. So for that reason, I will nuptial with Dallas.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
How about
What do you mean,
Santiago? You're going to have to hold him. Santiago, you're in charge of this game. I mean, you're going to have to hold him accountable. He's got to say.
What does that mean? I said my.
We've got his voice saying I would marry them.
Yeah.
That's all I need. He said it in the past. I'm sure I can dig it up.
I said nuptial. Nuptials are.
It's not called nuptial marriage. It's not called cuddle nuptial trash.
Well, maybe it should be. Yeah. You know what? I will go to the altar with the Cowboys. All right?
I don't accept it.
Well, I'm sorry. I will cuddle. And it's not one of those like, you know what, I'm cuddling, hoping things happen. This is a romantic, beautiful, stirring cuddle.
It's aggressive.
I will cuddle the New York football Giants.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And I don't want any part of Washington.
Firmly garbage.
They beat the Bengals without Joe Burrow. It's not all that impressive. At home, no. No thank you. Kick him to the curb.
Yeah, I would like to disagree with Dave, but I can't. And I would just add to that, Washington and Philadelphia, I'll trash both of them. If there was something lower than trash that I could do with the Eagles, I would. Just because I don't like them.
Garbage disposal them.
Yeah, dumpster fire, whatever it is.
Right in the dumpster.
Something.
Fire. All right, here we go. Week 11 loss that made you the sickest. Give you the Green Bay Packers. I know Dave loved that loss. The Minnesota Vikings. Home loss to the Dallas Cowboys, and the Baltimore Ravens blowing a lead and losing to the Tennessee Titans.
The one that made me the sickest, I got to marry the Ravens just because I felt like it was time for them to exercise that demon that is the Tennessee Titans. Came into their place in the divisional round last year, a 14-win team, and you let Derrick Henry and company run roughshod over you. I thought they would come out and make more of a statement. They got ahead in the game, and then they took their foot off the gas, and that was all Tennessee needed to claw themselves back into it. And then just the way that it all went down with A.J. Brown bullying the Ravens' defense for the game-tying score. Like, I don't know. I got to marry that one. That was disgusting. If you're the Minnesota Vikings, that's got to be a disgusting L. You've won, what, 3 straight games? You were rolling. You're as hot as any other team in football. And then you go and you lay an egg at home against a 2-win Cowboys team. That has to be, yeah, I got to cuddle that. And then I would trash the Packers' loss. Even though we all felt like the Packers were the better team, they were playing in Indy against a 6-win squad at the time. So I don't know how bad of an L that is.
All right, Ricky, you'll be pleased. There'll be a little disagreement here. Although I do respect Chris's decisions, I disagree slightly with them. And I'm going to marry Minnesota. Because Minnesota was rolling. And a win against the lowly Dallas Cowboys would have really, I mean, you could argue they would have been in great position for the postseason. And that might go out the window now. So that's a horrendous loss. I mean, I can't speak highly enough of how bad of a loss that was for Minnesota. And losing to that team, oh, shake your head at that. And then I'm going to say Green Bay. I'll cuddle Green Bay. Because that's
Bombs
a game that, I mean, you're crushing them. You're destroying them. It's Philip Rivers. It's a big game. This is what the Colts do in the big game, and you outdid them in the big game. If you're Green Bay, that was a terrible loss from the Packers. So I will cuddle that. And Baltimore is a brutal loss as well for all the reasons that Chris mentioned, but you're not going to win the division anyway. You're probably still going to get in regardless. So as difficult as it was to deal with that loss, I will trash the Ravens.
You said they were going to get in regardless. They're on the outside looking in if the playoffs started today.
Yeah, but they're still going to get in.
Okay. All right.
I feel
all right. Here we go. Christopher Candy, I got to give Mike T credit too. Mike Tannenbaum texted me immediately after the appearance.
Did he really?
Right away. Yeah.
Good on him. Good job by Mike.
My apologies. It's been great. It's class act, that Mike Tannenbaum. Class act. Canty asked him the question, who will win the NFC West? I think we all kind of shook our heads a little bit and maybe disagreed. So I'll ask you guys, NFC West, Rams, Seahawks, Cardinals.
I'm going to marry, and I think there might be disagreement here because I know that Chris does not like this quarterback. But as far as the most complete team, I don't think it's a question. I'm going to marry the Rams.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
I mean, typically they run the ball well. Their receivers are excellent. The quarterback, I think, is better than most believe. Their defense is one of the best in football. They're a brilliantly coached team. I feel good about that. I will marry the Rams. I will cuddle Seattle.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And, yeah, I just don't see it. I don't think Arizona is at the level of the other two, so I will trash. I like them. I think they're a postseason team. But I'm not involving myself in a marry or a cuddle situation with the Cards.
Okay, Rico, you'd be glad to know there's quite a bit of disagreement right here. I'm with Dave. I'm with Dave with trash and the Cardinals. I just don't think that they're at that level yet. They're already ahead of schedule in terms of their overall program with Kingsbury and Kyler Murray, but they're not going to win the division title. Let's put that to bed. What I will say is I'm going to marry the Seahawks.
If it was socially acceptable,
in winning that division. Have you guys taken a look at the Seahawks' schedule?
Well, I know they have the Jets the Giants. They have Philly this week.
They've got three NFC East teams. They've got the Jets, and they've got the 49ers in addition to a matchup with the Rams in L.A. So even if they lose that game in L.A., you've got the Eagles, Giants, Jets, Washington, and San Francisco. Seattle's going to win that division. The Rams' schedule, no cakewalk at all. They're a good team, respect them, but they got a much harder road in order to win the division.
All right, here we go. Let's go with a Thanksgiving-style cuddle, nice. Marry, trash. We're going to go, we went with sides. I was going to ask you what kind of stuffing you liked, but I decided, you know what, let's go with, I got a sweet tooth. Let's go with some dessert. I'll give you a beautiful, delicious apple pie. I'll even give you the scoop of ice cream, scoop of vanilla right on top. I'm going to give you a nice piece of pumpkin pie. Little whipped cream if you like it. And then I'm going to give you a pecan pie. Underrated pecan pie. What are you doing here, David? Or Christopher, whoever wants to start first.
Chris, all right, so we got pumpkin pie, apple pie, and pecan pie?
Yes, sir.
All right, so I got to marry the apple pie.
If it was socially acceptable.
And I'm going a la mode with it, a scoop of vanilla ice cream. I got to marry that sucker. I am going to cuddle the pecan pie. I feel like the pecan pie is very underrated, not given the respect that it absolutely deserves. Put that sucker in the microwave for 30 seconds. You got kind of all kind of gooey magic going on in your mouth when you're chewing that. And I'm going to trash the pumpkin pie. I always felt like the pumpkin pie was an imitator to the sweet potato pie. It's just not the same. So, I mean, I want contenders, not pretenders when it comes to my dessert cart for Thanksgiving. Pumpkin pie got to go. Got to go.
Wow.
All right, Rick, you love us to disagree. You love some animosity. You picked it right here. To speak like that, Chris, about the pumpkin pie is sacrilege. And I will...
Okay.
I will marry it.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
I think it's underrated. I think it should make appearances more often than solely on Thanksgiving. I don't know why it's not a staple, a nice summer on-the-deck pie. Could be pumpkin pie. You're giving me whipped cream in that? Oh, give me a break. Absolutely. Absolutely, I'm marrying the pumpkin. I will, I mean, apple pie. It's as American as apple pie.
No, surprise face. The surprise bonus. Face, you're gonna cuddle the apple pie. Surprise.
Yeah, cuddling the apple pie.
Cuddle.
Ice cream is the bonus. I'm all involved in that. And listen, I like the pecan pie. I'm a fan of it. But with that trio you're giving me, it gets kicked to the curb, and it is trash.
Can we all agree on one thing, though? Sweet potato pie is better than pumpkin pie. Can we agree on that?
Ooh.
No, I don't know that I don't know you're going to have an agreement for me on that.
Wow. Okay.
Listen,
all right.
Now, here's the thing.
Very
this
interesting.
This is like choosing between your children. I mean.
No, it's not. It's not even close. Sweet potato pie is head and shoulders above pumpkin pie.
Oh, no, I know.
I don't know what planet you guys are from.
I don't agree with that.
I like both.
Yeah,
it depends on who makes it, I think. I think that could be said with any of these.
If you're having a bad piece of whatever, you don't want it.
No, but I've had a sweet potato pie that I actually enjoyed more than I've had a piece of pumpkin pie, and I've also had delicious pumpkin pies. It's all who makes it.
Where do you go with that trio, by the way?
Ooh, I'm marrying the apple
pie. For argument's sake, it's all top shelf. It's all made wonderfully well. Where are you going?
I'm going to marry the apple pie. I think I'm going to cuddle the pecan pie.
Wow, you're trashing the pumpkin too.
Well, you know what? Because I like ice cream with my dessert, and you, a giant scoop of ice cream on a warmed up piece of pecan pie. Forget it. Forget it.
It's phenomenal. The pumpkin pie.
No, I love the pumpkin pie. I agree. It should be eaten more often. Like I would.
You agree?
I'd eat a piece
on the deck
of pumpkin
in the
pie
summer.
For, yeah. I don't know about on the deck. Yeah, and yeah, nothing. That'll be the next Corona commercial with Bad Bunny and Snoop on the patio having a piece of pumpkin pie and a Corona. There you go, Dave. Do you have any?
Oh, I do. Rob Stinchfield tweets in, after this year, who do you want as your quarterback moving forward? Wentz, Darnold, Stafford.
I would marry Stafford.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. I like him. I would cuddle Darnold and I would trash Wentz right now.
Wow. So
completely agree.
Down on Wentz.
Completely
wow.
agree.
Stafford, to me, seems like the obvious.
I just feel like I can fix the other quarterbacks. Like, Stafford is just a matter of circumstance, coaching, and talent around him. Darnold, same thing. I don't know what the hell is going on with Wentz. You got a championship-level coach. You got a pretty good core of players. Why can't we fix it?
It's a problem. Dan, with a lot of numbers after the name, says, with all the ACL injuries, I have one for CMT. Barkley, Beckham, or Burrow, who has the better comeback next year?
I would say Barkley has the better comeback. I would marry Barkley, cuddle Beckham, and then I don't know what's completely wrong with. We heard further structural damage. Does that mean cartilage damage? Like, his knee is shredded. Burrow's knee is shredded. He's got MCL, ACL, and more structural damage.
Yep.
Bad. On his plant leg. I don't know. That scares me a little bit.
Scares me. Not sure it scares the Bengals because they had a quarterback with a reconstructed knee, and he turned out to be all right in Carson Palmer. I'll cuddle Burrow. I'll marry Beckham because I think that was just a straightforward ACL tear. Guys come back from that in 6 to 8 months. And then the one with Saquon Barkley, guys, I gotta trash that. I worry about Saquon Barkley being able to stay healthy from here on out because he plays the most violent position on the football field, which is running back. Every play you're in the game, people are going to try to hit you.
That's not why. That's exactly why you don't take a running back 2 overall. Today on ESPN Daily, college basketball makes its return to the court for the first time since the pandemic hit. Myron Metcalf joins to preview the teams and players to pay attention to this year on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. I want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere. Just click Listen Live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN. At 98.7 ESPN New York, we go where you go. The Premature Pirates have Chris Herndon at 11:30 and Jay Williams at noon today. The K-Show has Obi Toppin at 5 and Keyshawn at 5:30. Now, Chris, you're not with us tomorrow, so I just want to wish you and your family and everybody a healthy, safe, happy Thanksgiving from Rick and I and all the listeners to you today.
Well, thank you for that, Dave. I want to wish all of our listeners a happy Turkey Day as well. Hope everybody stays safe and enjoys the holiday.
Now, you promise us you'll eat until you feel uncomfortable, right?
Oh, 100%.
Okay,
cool. I've been waiting for this for the last 2 weeks, Dave.
Terrific. Have a great holiday. It's Rule 76.
No excuses, play like a champion. It's DPH, Rocanti, Rothenberg, and...
Hey, everybody.
On 98.7 ESPN.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Kicks them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.